This morning we're going to be in Hebrews 11 again, and this time we're looking at faith and wisdom and the courage and that God gave people to conquer. Our text today shows us that what faith did for imperfect people, and we need to remember that these people were just like us. And I just take great encouragement in the fact that they're just like us. They weren't anything different than us, and we can trust the Lord for that. Hebrews 11 has been showing us that throughout history, faith gave people courage in struggle, courage when they were suffering, courage while they were waiting and waiting and waiting, and still they trusted God and leaned on God. Now this morning, along with the faith, we want to look at the wisdom. Wisdom is seen in responding to life situations, whatever they might be, from God's frame of reference. Or to say it another way, wisdom is continually looking to God at all times, no matter what we're going through. And Hebrews 11:32, the first verse in our text, starts out by saying, "And what more shall I say? For time would fail me if I tell of." And then we'll just pause there. And then he names six different men in verse 32. And interestingly, he does not give them in chronological order as they appear in the Old Testament. That was a surprise. I looked and looked to figure out why, and I couldn't figure it out. He started with number two that is mentioned, and then he did number one. Then he went to number four, and then he came to number three. Then he went to number six, and he came to number five. I don't know why he did that, but that's the way the way it's presented to us. After they saw and responded to life from God's point of view, they demonstrated faith in God and their trust in God. In other words, as we look at what he's saying here, it would take too much time to recount all the illustrations of faith that the Bible gives. And I would say it also would take too much time for us to develop each of those six and the rest of the verses this morning, because we could do a sermon on each one. And so what we're going to do this morning is do a thumbnail sketch of each one, just kind of a little picturette, let's say, of each one as we go along. First one is Gideon that he lists. That's in Judges 6 and 8 through 8. And like I say, that's the second one mentioned. Faith and wisdom gave Gideon victory over the Midianites, even though that he was insecure. It starts out, as we go back to Judges 6, in verses 12 and 13, it says, "The angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon and said to him, 'The Lord is with you.' And Gideon said to the angel, 'If the Lord is with us, why then is all this happening to us?'" And we feel that way sometimes, don't we? We feel like the Lord is with us, but all this bad stuff's happening. And so God convinced Gideon that he really was with him, and Gideon went out and raised an army of 32,000 men. And the Lord said, "That's too many." And so he trimmed that 32,000 down to 300 to go against the Midianites. Now, all the Midianites had was 120,000 men. And so that's only 400 to 1 that he got it down to, that he was supposed to go out and deal with them. In Judges 7, and verse 7, it says, "And the Lord said to Gideon, 'I will deliver you with the 300 men who lapped up the water from their hands, and will give the Midianites into your hands.' And so all the other people tell them to go home." So he's down from 32,000 to 300. He's got this army out there of 120,000 to go against. And So Gideon divided up his 300 men into three companies of 100 each and scattered them out around the Midian camp. And then they each had a pitcher, and inside the pitcher was a torch that was lit, and they each had a trumpet in their right hand, and they went around, and at the signal, they broke the pitcher and blew the trumpet and yelled for a sword for the Lord and for Gideon. Now, I don't know about you, but if I'm a Midianite soldier and I'm out on the battlefield and I'm laying there asleep and in the night, and all of a sudden I hear this big crash and lights spring up all the way around and trumpets are blowing. And by the way, it didn't say they were making music on them. That wasn't a qualification. They just had to make a noise out of this thing. And so, you know, it's blowing, and for the sword and for Gideon, that would be rather shocking, I would think. And so they all took off. And so after that event, Gideon continued to show his faith and trust in God because they wanted him to be the ruler over them. And chapter 8 and verse 23, Gideon said to them, "I will not rule over you, nor shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you." Now, I think it's interesting that the Gideons have taken Gideon as their mantra, their one that they're looking to. And the idea is just a few are going to deal with the many. And so we see that coming down to us today. The second one in Hebrews 11, 32 is Barak. Now you notice that he was in Judges 4 and 5. So he came before, chronologically, he came before Gideon. And by faith and wisdom, Barak was given victory over the Canaanites, even though he was hesitant. And in Judges 4 and verse 3, the sons of Israel cried to the Lord, for the Canaanite commander Sisera had 900 chariots of iron, and he oppressed the sons of Israel severely for 20 years. So this wasn't just a short-range persecution. This was a long-range. It was for 20 years. And so Barak said to Deborah, the prophetess, and this is down in verse 8 and 9, "If you will go with me, I will go. But if you will not go with me, I will not go." Do you feel him hesitant? He's not eager to go out here. And she said, "I will surely go with you. Nevertheless, the honor shall not be yours, for the Lord will sell Sisera into the hands of a woman." And so then down in verse 14 of the fourth chapter, Deborah said to Barak, "Arise, for this is the day in which the Lord has given Sisera into your hands. Behold, the Lord has gone out before you." So Barak went down from Mount Tabor with 10,000 men following him, and the Lord routed Sisera and all of his chariots and his army at the edge of the sword before Barak. And Sisera alighted from his chariot and fled on foot. So then it tells us that he's running away from the battle on foot, and he comes to the tent of a woman by the name of Jael. And Jael encouraged him to come in, and she gave him some milk and then gave him a place to lay down and sleep. And he did that, and he went sound asleep. In the fourth chapter, in verse 21, then Jael took a nail of the tent and took a hammer in her hand and went softly to him and smote the nail into his temples and fastened it into the ground, for he was fast asleep and weary. So he died. Now, I don't know about you, it took a lot of faith for Barak to go out against Sisera. But here's this little woman, Jael. She's got this commanding general laying there asleep, and she takes a tent peg and she comes up to him and she puts it by his temple, and then she takes a mallet and she pounds it through his head and sticks him to the ground. Now, I don't know which one had the more faith. You had to come up to him and do that. It would really be something I don't know, it would be a heart stopper, let's say it that way, as she dealt with him. Then afterward, Barak and Deborah praised the Lord. Chapter 5 of Judges, starting with verse 1. And then sang Deborah and Barak, saying, "Praise ye the Lord for the avenging of Israel when the people willingly offered themselves." So they praised the Lord and they trusted the Lord, and the Lord delivered them from the Canaanites as they were being oppressed. Third one is Samson, and that skips down to Judges 13 and verse 24 through 16. And he's the fourth one mentioned in Scripture. "And faith and wisdom gave Samson victory over the Philistines, even though he was immoral." I think it's fascinating that each one of these people had a weakness, and in Samson was morality. In Judges 13:24, it says, "And Samson's mother bore a son and named him Samson. And the child grew up, and the Lord blessed him." Now, it is not necessary to believe that by mentioning Samson in the Hebrews 11, that God is approving everything that Samson did, because it certainly he didn't. But all that it is commending is that with faith and wisdom, Samson did some pretty incredible things. He was imperfect, yes, but he had a confidence in God. So the first thing that the scripture tells us that he did was that Samson was angry with his Philistine fiancé's father, because they got engaged and he goes home and her father married her to somebody else. And he comes back and he wasn't happy about that. So he did something pretty incredible. He tied the tails of 300 foxes together and he set torches on fire and somehow had those tied in the tails. And then he set them loose in the grain fields and burned them all up. Now, I was trying to visualize that. And first thing you got to do, now these are cats and not foxes, but these Arabian foxes that were in Palestine weighed 6 pounds. And I wish I could have gotten a picture to show you, their mouths would open this wide. And so, you know, they had significant teeth. Now, how do you do that? First thing he's got to do, he's got to go and catch 300 of them. Now, I don't know how you go about catch 300 fox. And then you got to store them someplace. And it's interesting that when you get 300 of them that weigh 6 pounds, you end up with 1,800 pounds of fox. I don't know how you do that. Where do you keep them, and how do you do that? And then all he had to do is go and get them from where he had them. He had to take them out, and he somehow had to get their tails and tie their tails together. It doesn't say he wasn't bit. I will say that. Somehow he must have gotten bit. He must have gotten clawed. Maybe he had gloves with leather gauntlets over sleeves or something. I don't know, but if you got gloves on, how do you tie the tails? I don't know. It just seemed like a real challenge to me to take and make 150 pairs of these fox and tie a torch in there, get it lit, and then turn them loose. It's quite a thing. So the Philistines got upset over what he did. And so they killed his former fiance and her family. And so Judges 15 and verse 8, he smote them hip and thigh. I like it in the King James. Smote them hip and thigh with a great slaughter. So he just went out and killed a bunch of them. And so the Philistines, they got mad about that. And to take pressure off from what the Philistines were doing to Israel, the Israelites went up to Samson and they tied him up with new ropes and brought him to the Philistines. In the 15th chapter of Judges, in verses 4 and 5, when he came to Lehi, the Philistines shouted as they met him, and notice this, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily, so that the ropes were on his arms as flax that is burned with fire, and his bonds dropped from his hands, and he found the fresh dry bone of a donkey. So he reached out and took it and killed 1,000 men with it. Now, I found a picture of a donkey's jaw. I put it in your notes there. A jawbone, it's kind of like a Y. It's 16 inches long, so it's this long. And from the front teeth there and to where the molars start, there's a gap, and that's about 3 inches. So I'm visualizing, he grabbed it around that place where we put the bit in their mouth, grabbed it with his fingers and hooked his forefinger and his thumb around the other part, and he used that as his weapon. And with that weapon, he went out and killed 1,000 men. An amazing thing that he did. Fourth thing about Samson, through Delilah and Samson's immorality, the Philistines captured Samson and put out his eyes. And we find that in Judges 16, verses 28 to 31. It said, and Samson called to the Lord and said, "Oh God, please, remember me and please strengthen me just this time, O God." Down to 29. Samson grasped the two middle pillars of the house on which the house rested and braced himself against them, the one with his right hand and the other with his left. And Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." And he bent with all his might so that the house fell on the Lord's, and all the people were in it. So the dead whom he killed at his death were more than those that he killed with his life. And then in verse 31, the end of it, it says, thus he judged Israel 20 years. So even though he did some immoral things, God used this man. And at times he had confidence and trust in God, and they went forward. The next one, number four, in Hebrews 11 is Jephthah. And Jephthah was actually number three chronologically, because his story is in Judges 11. And faith and wisdom gave Jephthah victory over the Ammonites, even though he was looked down on by others and he was rash. Starts out in Judges 11:1a, it says, now Jephthah the Gileadite was a mighty man of valor, and he was a son of a harlot. Excuse me just a sec. Verse 2, and Gilead's wife bare him sons, and his wife's sons grew up, and they thrust out Jephthah and said to him, "Thou shalt not inherit in our father's house, for thou art a son of a strange woman." So that was his background. He was the son of a strange woman, a harlot. His brothers rejected him, and he went off. But he was a mighty man of valor, and when there was a need, they sent for him. Now, it's interesting that many of the commentators don't like Jephthah being in Hebrews 11. They strongly reacted to him because he was harsh. He was rejected by many his brothers. He was a severe character. He was so severe that he even made a rash vow, and he kept the vow by killing his daughter. And so they said, well, why would you ever have a man like that listed with people of faith? But we need to remember that Jephthah and Samson and Rahab and others, that God is not commending all they did. Jephthah went forth to the battle, depending on God for protection and with confidence in God. And chapter 11 of Judges, verses 29 to 33 says, now the Spirit of the Lord came upon Jephthah, so that he passed through Gilead and Manasseh, verse 32. So Jephthah crossed over to the sons of Ammon to fight against them. And notice, and the Lord gave them into his hand. He struck them with a very great slaughter, 20 cities. So the sons of Ammon were subdued before Israel. He was God's man. God used him to deliver his people. And then the next one, 5, is David, and he's actually number 6 chronologically. Faith and wisdom gave David victory over many nations, even though later David committed adultery with, and then he had the woman's husband killed in an attempt to cover up the resulting baby. So in 2 Samuel 5 to 6 teaches us that faith gave David victory over the Jebusites. They had a town called Jebus. David took it and he renamed it Jerusalem. In 2 Samuel 5:10, David went on and grew great, and the Lord of hosts was with him. Faith gave David victory over the Philistines. Faith gave David victory over the Moabites. Faith gave David victory over the Armenians. And faith gave David victory over the Syrians. And then in 2 Samuel 8:6c and verse 14, it says, and the Lord helped David wherever he went. It wasn't based on he was such a good man. It was based on faith at work in him. And then the last name that is mentioned here was Samuel. And that is in 1 Samuel 15, verses 32 and 33. He's actually chronologically the 5th. And faith and wisdom gave Samuel victory over the Amalekites, even though Samuel's family was less than perfect. They did some very wrong things, and Samuel didn't prevent them or speak to them. But Samuel dealt with the Jews, who were rebellious and idolatrous people, and they were supposed to go out and kill the Amalekites, and they saved the king. And in 1 Samuel 15, 32 to 33, then said Samuel, bring ye hither to me Agag, the king of the Amalekites. Verse 33, and Samuel said, as thy sword hath made women childless, so shall thy mother be childless among women. And Samuel hewed Agag in pieces before the Lord in Gilgal. So, God has worked in a lot of people to free his people and protect them. Now, from here on, our text doesn't use any more names, but rather the number 7 in your notes there, he gives a listing of what the prophets did by faith. And that's Hebrews 32c to 38. And it just says, and the prophets. And And I find that very interesting because the prophets spoke with boldness, and even when the words that they had to share were not welcome and were received with hostility. And I find it amazing that God wrote one book, and in his one book, he gave 17 books to prophets. Isaiah through Malachi was all devoted to prophets. So God gave the prophets a lot of space in his one book. And Hebrews 11 is establishing that there's nothing impossible when faith is at work in us. Notice 11:33, Hebrews 11:33a, who by faith conquered kingdoms, performed acts of righteousness, obtain promises. Okay, they had some very trying and difficult circumstances, and yet faith and wisdom helped them to go forward. Verse 33b, they shut the mouths of lions. Now, what prophet had the lion's mouth shut? Daniel. Yeah, and Daniel said to the king in the morning, my God sent his angel and shut their mouths. And then verse 34, quenched the power of fire. Now who had the fire quenched for them? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And the furnace was 7 times hotter than it ought to be, and it killed the guys that threw them in. And the king looks in there, and they're walking around in there with somebody else. And in verse 17 and 18, it says, Daniel 3, if it be so, when they were threatening to throw them in, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. And in Daniel 3, 27, and they looked upon them, their bodies, the fire had no power, nor was the hair of their head singed, neither their coats changed, nor the smell of fire had passed on to them. God completely delivered them through that. And so the writer, so Hebrews is mentioning them. And then they escaped the edge of the sword. You remember that the Ahaziah, who was the son of Ahab and Jezebel, was out to do in Elijah, and he sent 50 men out to get him and to bring him in. And 2 Kings 1:10, it says, and Elijah answered and said to the captain of the 50, if I be a man of God, let fire come down from heaven and consume thee and thy 50. And fire came down from heaven and consumed the commander and his 50. So God did that. He escaped the edge of the sword. And he did that for Elisha. When the king of Syria came, and that was going to get them, and his Elisha's servant was all nervous about it. And Elisha said to him, don't be afraid. Those that are with us are greater than with them. And God opened his servant's eyes, and they were surrounded by chariots of fire. God delivered both Elijah and Elisha. And then from weakness were made strong. Here's a time of famine, and Elijah was told to go hide by the brook Cherith, and he's out there, and then a raven comes and feeds him. I'm not sure about eating that, but anyway, a raven came and fed him, and then he was fed by the widow of Zarephath. And then they became mighty in war and put foreign armies to flight. You remember Elijah? He captured the whole Syrian army and took them into Jerusalem, into Samaria, and took the whole army in. And when they could see where they were aghast that they had been captured. And then verse 35, women received back their dead by resurrection. Remember Elijah raised the widow of Zarephath's son from the dead? And Elisha raised the Shunammite's woman from the dead. So So women received back their children from the dead. And then others were tortured, not accepting the release so that they might obtain a better resurrection. Well, who was tortured? Well, there was a lot of them that had been tortured. Certainly one that had been tortured was Richard Warmbrand. He made the deliberate choice to identify with the Lord instead of capitulate and turn away from the Lord. And then verse 36, and others experienced mockings and scourging and yes, and chains and imprisonment. Wow, think of Jeremiah. Imprisoned, chained, thrown into a well in mud, given light rations, and he still hung true to the Lord. And then in verse 37, it says they were stoned. Stephen was one. Paul was another that were stoned. They were sawn in two. I don't know where that happened. They were tempted. They were put to death by the sword. Who do we know that was put to death by the sword? A prophet. John the Baptist. Cut off his head. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, ill-treated. Elijah was a hairy man with a leather girdle. John the Baptist had a garment of camel's hair and a leather belt around his waist, and he ate locusts and wild honey. And then verse 38, men of whom the world was not worthy, wandering in deserts and mountains and caves and holes in the ground. See, the problem with all these people is they were out of step with the world. And the world didn't like them to be out of step with them, and so they attacked them. But all these people that we've been looking at had faith and wisdom. They conquered in struggle. They continued in suffering. They counted on salvation that would be provided for them, even though they couldn't see it. So, with wisdom, they were able to respond to life situations from God's frame of reference. And I would say, may we never forget 1 Corinthians 1:24, that Christ is the power of God and the wisdom of God. Now that's Hebrews 11, and we got one more message on that, and it'll be the next one I share. But for application today, I'd like to close by presenting a present-day example. And I put the pictures of them in the back of your notes. It's Jay and Catherine Wolfe. They met in 2000, the year 2000, at Samford University in Alabama. And the first picture that you have there is of their wedding in November of 2004. After they were married, they moved to California, where Jay studied law at Pepperdine, while Catherine pursued a modeling career, and they got involved in the local church out there. The second picture is from 2007. Just before Jay's final semester, they welcomed the second son, James, and all their dreams had come true. Until April 21, 2008, so that's not very long ago, 2008, 6 months and 5 days after James took his first breath, Catherine's hands suddenly went numb, her arms went numb, her legs went numb, and she lost feeling all over. It just happened that Jay was home between classes, and he stared into his wife's dilated pupils And he had no idea that he was looking into the face of a woman whose brain was rupturing. She had evidently at birth a tangle of blood vessels in the middle of her brain called an AVM. And somehow this tangle of blood vessels in the middle of her brain burst, and causing a massive stroke that happened to her on that day. And it would require surgery if she was going to live. Seven neurosurgeons said they wouldn't do the operation. Finally, one said that he would do it, but he wasn't promising anything. 16 hours later, Catherine survived the surgeries, but this doctor warned Jay that she might be in a permanent vegetative state or completely, totally paralyzed, because he had to take out a third of her cerebrum inside of her brain. Surprisingly, 2 hours later, Catherine responded to commands to move her fingers. She couldn't open her eyes for another day, and then for weeks she couldn't speak or swallow. After 40 days in the ICU, she was transferred to the Neuro Rehabilitation Center for over a year. Jay said that he was devastated when he first got to see his wife after the surgery, because she was hooked up to so many machines. Her face was forever changed, and when she finally could begin to speak, he didn't recognize her voice. When Catherine came to from being under anesthetic and all that, she thought, God made a mistake. I should have died. But deep within her, peace calmed her. And this was before she could communicate with anyone. And the truth of Scripture that she had hidden in her heart since she was a little girl strengthened her. And she knew that God was in her. And she was fearfully and wonderfully made, even in this condition that she was now in. 7 months later, Catherine questioned God, saying, God, this really can't be your plan for me. And instantly, and this is where the faith that we've been studying comes in, instantly she felt his response, I don't make mistakes. There is a purpose in all this. Just wait. You'll see. 11 months after this stroke, she was able to take her first bite. Eighteen months after the stroke, they were able to get her up on her feet for the first time. It took 4 years for Catherine to accept her new life, not as a detour, but as a destination. It wasn't going to go away. She realized that she would never physically be healed on earth, and yet because of her trust in God, she said, hope healed my heart. In 2013, 6 years ago, Catherine and Jay started a ministry called Hope Heals, dedicated to helping people experience post-traumatic growth through the hope and faith that Jesus gives. In 2015, Catherine gave birth to a second son, John, and that's the bottom picture. And that's the way she looks now. In 2016, they wrote a book called Hope Heals, and so far it sold 75,000 copies. They have spoken to more than 200,000 people in 25 states, and have hosted a camp for nearly 600 individuals with post-traumatic stress disorder. Amidst unthinkable heartbreak, the wolves have experienced the thrill of living a life that by all logic they should have lost. They discovered that the message of Hebrews 11 is written in their story. When Jay was asked, "Do you ever regret your daily decision to choose contentment and stay together for better or for worse?" This is what he said. "At some point, every spouse thinks, is this what I signed up for?" He went on to say, "Staying together has been the most gloriously difficult experience of our life. But it has enabled us to live purposely without regret. All this, the opportunity to be parents together, to be in ministry together, to work together, to be married, to deal with disabilities, are all our opportunities to give and receive grace, to allow others to enter our lives, and to pour our lives into theirs." Their life verse, I put at the bottom of your notes, it's Isaiah 45:3, and it comes from the New Living Translation. "And I will give you treasures hidden in the darkness, secret treasures. I will do this so that you may know that I am the Lord, the one who calls you by name." Jay said, "Faith and hope is the treasure we have found in the darkest of detours. The purest riches hidden in the secret places. And now we're living the dream that we could not have planned for." That's faith. And that's what wisdom and faith will do to us. Now, I don't know where this message found you today, and I don't know what kind of struggles you're up against or what kind of pressures are involved in your life. But Hebrews is telling us that whatever those are, they're not too big for God. However imperfect we think we are, God's not looking for how perfect we are. God is there and He is willing to be what we need if we'll trust Him. Oh Lord, thank you for the testimony of these that have walked before you. And Father, I pray for every one of us here today. We all have pressures. All of us have things going on. But Lord, might we keep our eyes upon Jesus, because He is the wisdom of God and the power of God. Help us not to give up, Lord. Help us not to doubt. Help us to live so that you can be glorified. In your name.